The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
Attention tenant farmers, it's a year on from the publication of the ROC report. What's changed?
There has been quite a rapid progress, certainly with SFI 24, that we've seen more of those options available to tenants, so that's definitely a step in the right direction.
This year's sugar beet campaign has finally concluded. What with the weather and predictions of dire harvests, how was it?
Because the rain came so early last autumn, a lot of people left the beet in the ground thinking, oh, well, we'll be all right in the early spring, it will come dry, but it hasn't come dry.
And the removal vans are at Lincolnshire Young Farmers, and it's annual rally time soon. Hear about that with an update from the YFC, plus agronomy advice, the markets, and the week's farming news.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Well, it's been a good bit warmer this week, hasn't it? Anybody would think it was spring. This is the Farming Programme podcast for the 5th of May 2024. Hello, I'm Steve Orchard. In the news, DEFRA's extended the consultation on targeted culling to tackle bovine TB. The 13th of May is the new date if you want to have your say. The proposals, which are part of delivering the next phase on England's TB eradication strategy, were set out in a consultation last March. Is culling the answer, or vaccination, or a combination? You can respond via the DEFRA website. Following the success last year when the government pledged to back farmers' interest in future trade deals and boost UK fruit and veg production, the second Downing Street Farm to Fork Summit has been confirmed to be held on Tuesday, the 14th of May. We're expecting new action on protecting farmers and boosting British food production. Fingers crossed, and we'll report back in a couple of weeks on the Farming Programme podcast. A new soil sensing station is to start trials at more than 20 UK farms. It aims to cut fertiliser use and increase profitability, and we'll hear all about it on the Farming Programme next week. The government has introduced what it calls crucial changes to food import checks, as well as animal and plant products, to improve the country's biosecurity. These include identity and physical checks at destination for medium-risk products. High-risk goods will be checked at the border, where before they were checked at destination. DEFRA says these checks will help identify public health issues such as salmonella and build on existing safeguarding measures that identified diseases like African swine fever, which is widespread in certain countries across Europe and could be devastating to UK pig farms. A year ago, the ROC report on tenant farming was published and submitted to the government. Has anything happened as a result? Lincolnshire farmer Mark Coleman represents the Tenant Farmers Association on the Farm Tenancy Forum. Mark, firstly, a bit of background, please. What was the ROC report?
It was instigated really by George Eustace when he was Secretary of State, because as we were heading down the route with Elms and SFI in particular, he was concerned, I think after representations by ourselves and others, that the tenanted sector were going to be disadvantaged, perhaps I could put it like that, rather than, and he wanted to ensure that they weren't, because I think him and the current Secretary of State believe that the tenanted sector is a, you know, it's an important part of a vibrant agricultural industry. So that's where it started, and he asked Baroness Rock to lead the review. And she still is very much involved in working out how we implement some of the recommendations. And she took a lot of evidence from right across the country, and included a cross section of, I'll say the great and the good, but that's perhaps not quite the right word, but a cross section of the industry, you know, from the CLA, so to the landowning community, from ourselves, from the agent community. We're all part of her review committee. So, and then she came up with, I think it's 74 in total, recommendations as to how to ensure that the sector would remain resilient and was able to cope. And also, I guess, what should be done within Elms and SFI to ensure that tenants weren't disadvantaged.
Yes, because that's been one of the main talking points, hasn't it, really, that SFI seems to benefit potentially the landowner rather than the tenant.
Yeah, I think that was certainly one of the concerns, and still is one of the concerns. I think what we have managed to achieve so far on the forum with SFI in particular is that there have been, I suppose, initially in SFI 22, this started with quite a lot of options which were available to tenants who believe that they have management control of that land for the 3-year period. So it took away the necessity for landlord's consent, which obviously was part of the stewardship agreements, and SFI is a shorter term, 3 years anyway. So I think it's a step in the right direction. And certainly the forum, one of the things that we have concentrated on or taken a lead on, I think initially on the forum, was around making sure that where it's possible, that options are available to tenants under those same terms. So whether that's 3 years or in some cases 5 years. But certainly, I think what we have managed to impress on DEFRA and got actioned is that where there is significant land use change, then clearly landlord's consent is required. And that's fine. I think everybody can agree with that. But otherwise, largely speaking, it's down to the active farmer, so the tenant, to do that. I think the thing I would stress with that is that we are very conscious that collaboration was a very big theme of the ROC report and the role that collaboration can play between landlords, tenants and professional agents. So whilst landlord's consent may not be obligatory, if you like, we would suggest that it's always a good idea to have a conversation. But it does mean that it is much more open to tenants. So I think that's to be welcomed.
So a year on since the ROC report was published, what's changed?
So I think what I've just alluded to has changed. I think there has been quite a rapid progress, certainly with SFI 24, that we've seen more of those options available to tenants. So that's definitely a step in the right direction. And also identifying those options where you don't need landlord's consent, but also really stressing that it's really the big land use change where you may absolutely need that. So that's good news. The other big thing which was published just around Easter time was the code of practice for agents, landlords and tenants to follow. This was quite a big theme of the ROC review, that a lot of evidence that was taken across the tenant community and others, evidenced a certain amount of, as we could just describe, a sort of poor behaviour on behalf of agents and landlords in certain cases. Now, I don't think anybody's suggesting that is the norm or it happens all the time, but it's felt that it's very important that we get rid of that bad practice. So code of practice, the forum set up a working group, you know, people from across the sector, so not wholly tenant focused by any means. And we're able to pull together, I think the draft they pulled together came together at the beginning of the year, and the code was published in early April. So in terms of a significant big win, I think that is something. Pleased to say it's been widely endorsed by the professional bodies and quite a number of the larger professional agents. So,
well, that was going to be my next question, because it's all very well and good publishing a code of practice. To what extent has it been adopted?
So it's early days, isn't it? It was published on the 8th of April. I think there is a willingness, certainly amongst the agent and landlord community and the tenant community. I think we've got to be clear, it's, you know, tenants need to behave properly as well, and so everybody's got to do their bit. But I think we could be really encouraged by the fact that the chair, Julian Sayers, who's chairing the Tenancy Forum, wrote out to 7, I think it was, of the larger national land agents middle of last month, just to kind of, you know, sound their views out. And I'm pleased to say that he's now, as of Monday, I think, had 7 very positive responses, all of whom have said that they are incorporating it into their ways of working. There's been a lot of discussion about what things may need to change in order to meet the code. So, yeah, it's early days. It's 3 weeks since it was published, Steve. So I can't identify a specific area where practice has changed, but I think we're encouraged by it. Yeah.
For an individual farmer, is it up to them to go to their landlord or vice versa and say, right, we now have this code of practice, can we agree that both of us adopt it?
A little bit, yeah. I think the intention would be that because the code of practice is what the professional bodies are following, that that would almost be a given. I think it is. It does give some more strength, I think, where farmers and tenants see that or believe that the practice isn't being followed, that they can flag that up. And I guess that comes on to you talking about what has actually changed. One of the other recommendations from the ROC review was that there should be a tenant farm commissioner, similar to how they have had in Scotland, I think, for about 4 or 5 years now. And part of that role would be to uphold the code itself and to ensure that people are following that. And we're hoping to hear sometime this month what the government response to that is. And we're hopeful that after various conversations and discussions we've had with the Secretary of State and DEFRA, that will be implemented. And I think it's fair to say that on the forum, there's a general consensus that there is a role for a farm commissioner. Whether it's entirely welcomed, we would definitely welcome it. And I think it would then give a very clear focus of where to go if you feel you're not being treated properly or someone's not following the code.
Is the TFA happy with what's happened, or is there more you'd like to see done?
I mean, Steve, we're farmers, so we're not happy. We're never happy. We're never happy. Yes, I think so. I would say that we are very positive about the steps that have been taken. If you had asked me in the autumn, were we happy? I think we'd have had to be a bit honest and say there was a danger that the forum and the ROC review was in danger of becoming a, you know, one of those, I don't know what you call it, get sort of put in the cupboard and go, that's a very nice review, thank you very much, we'll all move on. Yeah. And that the forum was potentially at risk of becoming a bit of a talking shop. I'm pleased to say, I think in hindsight, that was maybe everybody just sort of getting their feet under the table and sort of seeing how it would work together. There's, you know, 9 different organisations represented, from the Young Farmers Clubs to ourselves, to the NFU, to the CLA, to the Institutional Landlords and so on, the CAV and so on. So, you know, I think it's important that everybody kind of found their feet. I think since the new year, I would say we are much more positive about what progress we are starting to make. And I think that's really good news.
So what's next?
So I think we have some challenges to address. Clearly, there's a little bit of a concern that the new SFI and the wider elms thing, so landscape recovery, particularly up on the in the uplands and you know, more landscape scale schemes, that there is a risk that land will be leaving the tenanted sector for a range of reasons, you know. But I think ultimately, DEFRA states that it doesn't want to see a reduction in the tenanted sector in agriculture. The forum is clearly there to try and ensure that doesn't happen. And I think that is probably our biggest challenge going forward now, is to ensure that where those schemes are put in place, that tenanted land is not just removed from the sector in order to fit into a scheme. I think it's fair to say there are examples where we're concerned about where that's happening. On the other hand, it's also fair to say that the data to date from DEFRA suggests that whilst there is evidence that it's happening, the scale of it is, you know, we're not talking 20% of the land at the moment, but an acre of land going out of the tenanted sector is something that we don't welcome. So, you know, we've got to be careful that we've got schemes that suit everybody. And I think the other area that we need to really focus on going forward, and the code should really help with this, is that, as I said earlier, the ROC review stressed very much the importance of collaboration between landlords and tenants. And I think we are undertaking a job, if you like, to try and pull together where we see evidence of really good practice, where landlords, you know, whether they be institutional or private landlords, large or small, are really working well with their tenants to take advantage of what schemes are out there, whether they be public or private. And there are quite a number of those good examples out there. And it's very easy to get focused on the bad examples, whereas actually I think we are keen to stress and see where good examples are and to highlight where they are. And that also couples in with trying to ensure and get evidence as to how we can encourage longer term tenancies, because clearly at 3.2 years, which is the average FBT at the moment, it doesn't give you a lot of time to get going in an agricultural farming sense. So,
and the future now, Mark, for the forum itself?
I think the key here is that we want to see the forum as being a place where we are actually really delivering something out on the ground. It's very easy for these things to become talking shops and it becomes a sort of interesting intellectual exercise. I think as an organisation, I don't want to sound arrogant saying this, but we sort of took the lead by choosing to have a farmer member in myself to sit on the board. The NFU followed suit and so did others. So that's really positive, I think, that we're not just, you know, I think that's may perhaps help to make a change to the narrative that we're doing. And inevitably, we're very impatient. So we're very impatient people. We're grumpy and impatient. So I'm hoping that we can really deliver something, and that's what it's there for.
Excellent. Grumpy and impatient. Yeah, just about sums up most of us, really, doesn't it?
Yes.
If somebody's wanting to have a look at the code of practice, where could they get this? Is it on your website?
So it's on our website, yeah. I believe it's also on the CLA website, the NFU website. So, yeah, there's a whole load of places to find that. So, but yeah, certainly go to our website and it'll be there. But it's been very well publicised, which is really important, I think.
All right, Mark Coleman from the TFA, thank you so much for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
It's been a pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
The removal vans are at Lincolnshire Young Farmers, and it's annual rally time soon. Let's get an update from Kate Knight. Morning, Kate. Removal vans? What's going on? Where are you going?
Well, yes, the YFC removal team. We are, after very many happy years with the University of Lincoln at the beautiful Rhizome campus, we are making an office move. All good things come to an end, and we've had a fantastic new opportunity to move our office onto the gorgeous Lincolnshire Showground site. So we're really excited about that. Sad to leave Rhizome, but on to new beginnings. And yes, you can find us at the top of the main ring in the new Lynx YFC office as of next week.
Splendid. I mean, it's not that far away for you, is it? Which is good news. Will anything change?
The phone number and our postal address. And that's probably about it. No, I don't think there's any huge change. You know, the YFC office will run like it always has, with me at the helm and Bridget, my brilliant right-hand woman. And I think it will be service as normal, but, you know, a bit more fun and collaboration to be had with the Agricultural Society and all the Showground team. So I'm really looking forward to it.
So we'll talk about the rally in a few minutes' time. But first, what's new with Lincolnshire YFC?
We're walking, hopefully everybody has heard about the brilliant Merrill Ward, who is walking the Viking Way in aid of Lincolnshire Rural Agricultural Chaplaincy. And we're really excited to be walking a leg with her. I have to say, Rosie Finney, our county chair, is walking the full 15 miles. I'm attempting to do 5, and I hope that's going to be all right. But we're hoping to support Merrill and raise lots of money for a great charity. And that's coming up very shortly. In fact, she's doing it at the moment, so we're joining her over the weekend.
As we said last week on the programme, we talked about that raising funds for the chaplaincy and hopefully keeping Alan Robson in a job.
Yeah, I hope so, because, you know, Alan Robson is truly amazing. We have been really lucky to be supported by him and the chaplaincy team and the LRSN team very much so recently. And we all love Alan, and let's hope another 25 years ahead.
So let's talk rally then. I know this is your favourite day of the year, and it's coming up soon.
Yes, I'm laughing nervously. It is, of course, one of my favourite days of the year alongside the Lincolnshire Show. It is coming up, which is why I laugh nervously, because there's a lot to do. But yes, it's Saturday the 18th of May. It's being hosted by the lovely Strawson family at the very beautiful Sturton Woods near Horncastle, near Bournemouth. And it's a beautiful setting. We can't wait. I hope the sun shines. We've got all the normal madness and fun of rally, where all the teams, all the clubs competing against each other to win that gorgeous Rally Cup. And Louthing Farmers have won it for a good few years now. And I know for lots of reasons they'll be trying to win it again this year, but they've got lots of clubs hot on their heels.
Now, you say they compete against each other. Doing what? Give us an example of one or two things they have to do.
It's essentially a big competitions day. So I think we've got about, well, over pre-rally and rally, we've got about 80 classes. And they range from lots of crafty things, lots of doingy things. So all the normal things you'll see, like chems and secretaries and wheelbarrow races and blindfold yoghurt eating and bashing each other over a pool of water with a pillow, the very famous and wonderful tug of war. This year's themed the Paris Olympics, so I think we'll see quite a lot of sporting looking things as well as all the old favourites.
Yes, it's very serious stuff, isn't it? There are some serious bits though, aren't there?
Yeah, there are some serious bits. I mean, the serious bits are qualifying for sort of national final competitions and some of the competitions we then take on to Lincolnshire Show. And the serious bit is definitely who wins the Rally Cup, because they all want that. But it's a great day out for the family. And so if you're passing, or you know about Young Farmers, or you want to know about Young Farmers, come along to Sturton Woods on the 18th of May. There's loads of things going on. And there's trade stands and some of the charity stands and food, you know, food outlets, and all of us to welcome anybody and say hello.
Yes, it doesn't have to be just for Young Farmers, does it?
No, it definitely doesn't. And it's a great showcase of what Young Farmers do, but it's also a lovely day out. And we've got a dog show as well, which we've run now for a few years, and that's in aid of charity. So anyone who's got a dog and wants to come along and have a bit of fun with a dog show, all welcome as well. So yeah, it's a great day. It's you know, it's my favourite day of the year, we know.
And it was fabulous weather last year at Wardy's Farm at Ledenham. Let's keep fingers crossed, as ever, for the weather. And just give us the date and the location and where we can go for information one last time, Kate.
The date is a Saturday, the 18th of May. All roads will lead towards Sturton Woods at Bournemouth near Horncastle. And it'll start sort of normal hours, probably 9:30, and go on into the night. But the bulk of it will be sort of between the hours of 10 and 3, and dog show happening as well. So, yeah, if you want to find more about it, we've got really active social media pages on our website. Just search Lincolnshire Young Farmers County Rally and you'll find information about it, I'm sure.
Kate, it's going to be another brilliant event. Look forward to Rally 2024. Kate Knight, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's head to the fields now for a look at the crops and some timely agronomy advice. Now that we've warmed up a little bit and things are starting to move, crop doctor Sean Sparling's here in his T-shirt and shorts. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. Things have most certainly warmed up since we spoke last week. Soil temperatures almost 7 degrees warmer than they were 7 days ago, going from 6.7 to 13.6. And things have finally dried up as well since Sunday's inch or so of rain. But I'm going to say what needs saying, and that is that the last thing we need now is for things to dry up completely as we head into May in the early summer, because unless we continue to get these constant wettings, like the 10 mil or so of rain every 7 to 10 days or so, we're going to find ourselves in a dry, tough, concrete mess, with these crops struggling to actually get up through the ground to get going and keep going. The key thing to protecting these late drilled crops is going to be to keep them getting a nice supply of rain so that these fields don't dry out, bake solid. We don't want slow emergence, and we don't want to dry them out as they start to come through, because that'll just jigger us up another way. It's been such a wet first 4 months of the year, as we know, so it's entirely natural for everyone to want some hot, dry, sunny weather. But we do need to bear in mind that whatever's been already has absolutely no influence on what's still to come weather-wise. It could just as easily stay wet as it could dry up. I mean, it's been unprecedented, really, since the start of this year. I've taken 325 mil of rain in the first 4 months of 2024. I took 181 mil in the same period last year, 133 mil 2022, 181 mil in 2021. In fact, my average rainfall from the 1st of January to the 1st of May at home over the last 5 years is 147 mil. So we've had way more than double the 5-year average this spring. But we do have to react to what we get, and we need to accept it for what it is and just stop moaning about it and get on with it, I reckon. So much warmer this week, nicely into the 20s from Tuesday afternoon and Wednesday, settled back into the high teens again Thursday, bit nippy again on Friday and again today. But we are in the UK and we can't expect summer to happen all in one go at the beginning of May. And nor do we want it to be fair, as I've just said. We also had a couple of 3 days where the wind did drop enough to enable us to get out there and get some T1 fungicides onto the forward wheats and barleys. Tricky old lot timing things this spring. Weather all over the place, growth stages all over the place. Wheats which are now pushing out the tips of leaf 2 in some cases and widely at growth stage 32, ready for their T1 fungicide and the main dose of nitrogen as well. Winter barley's pushing the flag leaves out now, so most of the winter barley's have had their T1 and all of their nitrogen. If they haven't, they really should be a priority now. And of course, we're still trying to get the T0s on to the more backward stuff, of which many fields are only just starting to reach stem extension and growth stage 30. And with yellow rust such an issue in many varieties, just make sure you're applying these fungicides as well as you possibly can. Get that spray down into the base of the crop where the active yellow rust is hiding. You can already see where growers have been out and put a T1 on or a T0 on, and they've only just covered the tops of these canopies. And the fallout from that, from a yellow rust point of view, where, you know, it's going to be a joy to watch play out over the next few weeks. Keep the pressure up, keep the forward speed down. There's a lot of money going on these fields, so think about that when you're applying it, and apply it well. Watch those growth stages as well. As I said last week, you'll find that these crops which are being so stressed by the variable weather and soil conditions may well skip their growth stages and throw leaf 3 out as early as growth stage 30. So assume absolutely nothing. Make sure you know which leaf you're actually spraying and therefore which part of your fungicide program you should now be employing at that growth stage. There are some anomalies out here as well in winter wheat that we're starting to pick up. We're talking about yellow rust. If you remember a few years ago, there was a variety called Warrior winter wheat, which had a 9 rating against yellow rust, but which broke down with what became known as the warrior race of yellow rust in just one season. So just because the varieties of wheat you have in the ground have a good NIAB score for rust, it doesn't necessarily mean you can let your guard down. Palladium, for example, has a 9 rating for yellow rust and resistance, and yet we can find yellow rust in Palladium further down the country. Also, finding it in highly rated varieties like Mayflower, Dawson, Typhoon, Astronomer, X-Days, Laydham, Skyfall, obviously. Obviously, we're finding it in that because it's such a low score against it, as Gleam as well. And you'll need to be in the Skyfall in particular every 10 to 14 days through the season if you want to stay on top of it. But there's plenty out here to concern us as far as yellow rust goes. So attention to detail at application, as I've said, to manage it efficiently with the fungicide and choose the best product for the job. But when you're looking at varieties like Champion, which takes up a massive proportion of the wheat area this year and which has what should be a reassuring high score of 8 for yellow rust. If you then look at the parentage and see that it's a direct cross with Reflection, and we all know what happened with yellow rust in Reflection a few years ago, you realise that there are some good varieties which do have the potential for problems in their parentage. So be aware of all of that and be aware of the conditions. Make sure they're absolutely perfect to control the yellow rust, because it's perfect for the yellow rust to just kick you in the backside. So tailor those programmes, monitor things perhaps a little more closely than usual, and I think you'll be fine. Of course, the main thrust of your T1 is always going to be Septoria tritici, and we do have plenty of tools in that box these days, if not a few very expensive ones. I spot as well, as I said last week, showing in the field. You know what I'm saying about fungicides. Growth regulators already compromised in many of these fields that are shifting faster than a sour plum. So be aware of those growth stages, as I say, and cut the plants open. Make sure the crop is still safe from what you're planning to put on. Way too late, I think, now for spring beans, too late for spring wheat, spring barley. I heard the cuckoo on Wednesday, so you can't argue with that. Plenty of time for binding peas and sugar beet, though. Earlier drilled sugar beet and now had its first post-em as conditions allowed. The hail and the frost last week scuppered my first post-ems, and the winds ever since have meant that finding a day where a fine quality spray can physically be applied have been very complicated. But as the soils and the day temperatures have warmed up, so have the polygonums and dicots got a spurt on. So do prioritise those fields of sugar beet where it's getting away and you've had no pre-em put on it. You're likely to need a follow-up to that first post-em in 7 to 10 days following it in order to stay on top of these weeds as well once you start. Peach potato aphids, Mysis persici, they've caught those in the suction trap network in mid-April, almost to the day the Broom's Barn forecast said they would. Consequently, non-cruiser treated crops are going to need regular aphid monitoring from now onwards to make sure you identify the presence of aphids in these crops and to determine when the treatment threshold of one aphid per four plants has been reached. Crops treated with cruiser, they should be protected for about 10 weeks from the date of drilling. So it's warmer, things are moving, leaves are finally emerging, weeds are finally growing, the yellow rust is threatening to turn the county orange, the cuckoo's already told us not to drill any more spring cereals or beans, and we're already a week late reacting to it all. Apart from that, it's all good fun. Let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks as ever, Sean. More agronomy advice same time next week. And if you missed any of that, don't forget you can listen again, scroll back, pause and so on anytime on the online podcast edition of the Farming Programme. Coming up, we look back at the sugar beet campaign just ended, check the markets and weather.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate, Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
A challenging and much extended sugar beet campaign has recently finished. How was it in Lincolnshire? How is the new crop looking? Is it in yet? I popped out to find out from Andrew Ward at Lednam.
We've had, a challenging year, I think. We seem to be saying this every time I speak to you, Steve, with everything. But I think the weather definitely has impacted on big time, more than probably any other year. And I know the sugar beet, the factory was still open until probably, I think it was about the 10th or 15th of April, knew it was really late. And they had to keep it open because a lot of heavy land was still in the ground. And this is the difficult thing, that we'd normally lift our difficult soils and heavy soils in the autumn when it's drier, and then lift the lighter land in the middle of winter. And because the rain came so early last autumn, a lot of people left the beet in the ground thinking, oh, well, we'll be all right in the early spring, it will come dry, but it hasn't come dry. And some of the lifting conditions in the last few weeks have been horrendous, absolutely horrendous. But for us, we managed to get the heavy land beet out the ground before the end of September. We only had one field in 48 acres on the heavy soils, and took the decision to lift that early, which we lose a little bit of yield from that. But with soil damage, it was the right thing to do. And then all sugar beet on the light land, we were lifting throughout the winter, which again was fine because we hadn't done the sort of damage up there. So that was fine as well.
You've got quite a big difference, haven't you, between different fields? I mean, just looking at some numbers, you know, you got on one, you go 14.94 sugar, another one 16.18, yield on one field 69, another field 93 tonnes per hectare. That's a huge difference between two fields.
It's unreal, and we don't normally have those differences, but the yield of 64 tonnes a hectare, that was the heavy land field. But if you remember back to last spring, it was also wet, and we didn't get our sugar beet planted until the 5th of May on our heavy ground. And because it's on heavy ground, we needed to lift it early so we could get a following winter wheat crop in. And we lifted it on, I think it was September the 26th. So the weeks in the ground for that crop was really, really small. And it was very dry when it went in last spring, no rain for 8 weeks. And so the length of time in the ground really impacts on the yield. So that's why that one only did 64. Whereas the light land, you said we were over 90, which we were up there. And that's because it was harvested in February, March time, drilled earlier. So it went in the ground in good conditions in very early April, not harvested till February time, January some fields. And it just had longer in the ground. So
you managed to beat the factory average on sugar content again?
Yes, that's always pleasing. Pleasing to do that, and I don't really know why we do it or how we do it, but our soils do seem to like sugar beet down here, or sugar beet likes our soils, and we do use sewage sludge on the fields as a form of organic manures and fertiliser, and I think that helps. So generally, yes, it's nice to do that.
Looking at a longer term picture though, there's been quite a significant difference in sugar content, say, over the last 10 years, hasn't there? Quite a drop.
There has, and I don't really know the answer to that. And I think it might be useful, actually, to maybe speak to the plant breeders sometime, or the BBRO, the British Bee Research Organisation, because we are seeing definitely decreases in sugar content of these varieties. And I've shown you, Steve, that in the office about how it's paid for, and all our yields are based on a 16% sugar. So for us to have higher sugars, it means it's better for us because we haven't got the haulage of actually a ton of beet. It's in the sugar content we get paid on. So sugars are dropping in varieties, yet the root weight of those varieties, the yield that those varieties could capable of, is increasing. So I think we're getting lower in one, but maybe higher in another.
Yeah, because there is, again, a big difference in the yield per hectare for the last 10 years, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And when you look at some of the yields we were getting a few years ago, we were getting sort of 18.5% sugar in some years, sort of 10 years ago, and we're not getting anywhere near that. And when you get that level of sugar, it really, really does make a big difference to your tonnes per hectare.
Yeah, say with a factory average of 15.55 this year.
Yes, exactly. You know, that is a really low sugar, and I think our average was just under 16, whereas our early sugars were lower than that. But for to have an average for a whole season of under 16%, I think it really does show the difficult weather and the season we've had to deal with.
How's the new crop going in? Has it gone in?
Well, we have got 60 acres in on the Lightland up on the Heathland, and we got that in 2 weeks ago, and that's gone in fine. Again, a little bit later, it ought to have gone into March, but it was so wet in March we couldn't. That's gone in well up there. We've got quite a lot of trials going with Agri, with our iFarm open days we have, so it'd be good to show you what we're doing up there. And we've got some strip trials going on up there where we just cultivated the area where the sugar beet's going, so in narrow bands, and then we've planted the sugar beet in those bands so that stubble between there, so we can have a look at that sometime. It's not through the ground yet, so that's it will be soon. Down here on the heavy soils, we have still got to work them and get the sugar beet in. And the problem is, the top of the surface is like concrete, and underneath is just like mush. And how are we going to do that? Yeah, I really, really don't know how we're going to work that. We still have to do that. But with the weather forecast and, you know, the way we are, we're not getting very much luck.
Now, it's going to be an interesting harvest yet again, isn't it? Just on a side note, are you planning to run haricot beans again this year?
Yes, we are. We have got, last year we had 13 acres in the ground, and you came and had a look at them a few times growing. So we had 13 acres in the ground, and this year we're jumping to 154 acres. So a big increase. But really, everything we produced last year from the 13 acres is going into us this year. So again, we're the only ones growing this variety Capulet to make baked beans. But they don't need to go in the ground well early to mid-May. So we're all right with those, and we will manage hopefully to get those in because the ground is drying up now a little bit.
Fingers crossed.
Exactly, that's what we need. I mean, lots of luck and lots of things crossing.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Steve.
The Farming Programme. Market
reports. Starting with livestock from Louth, good morning to auctioneer Ed Middleton.
Good morning, Steve. This week we start away with the prime cattle. This week heifers all in average 237.5 pence per kilo, and the steers average an all in 286.86 pence per kilo. Trading numbers up this week with new buying accounts around the ring, which created a fantastic trade. Top spot this week went to GL and MCAR of Louth at £1,752.75, or 307.5 pence per kilo. Cool cows this week topped at 176.5 pence, or £1,253.15 for J. Ray and Sons of Harmston. Moving on to the sheep, this week we started away with the prime lambs. We had an SQQ this week of 389.84 pence per kilo, and an all-in average pounds per head of £162. Spring lambs starting to move now. An excellent run of lambs this week from R. Ray and Sons of Harmston, which sold to a top of £176, and also topping the pence per kilo at 414 pence. Moving on to the prime hogs, an SQQ of this week of 360.46 pence per kilo, and an all-in average of pounds per head of a fantastic £173.30. Top spot this week went to G. Smithson of Tuphome at £214, and the top price of the pence per kilo for R.I. Clough & Sons of Holton Holgate at 417 pence per kilo. R.A. Coulson of Market Raisin tops at £208 and 200. Moving swiftly on to the cull ewes, this week we had an average of £142 and 28 pence. A storming trade for the best top end ewes with a top spot this week to G&DM Housham of Stickford at £190. A reminder, this coming Monday we have a show and sale of ewes and lambs. Entries are taken on the day, and we also have a sale of store cattle. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And with a look at the grain markets, Open Fields' Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. The start of the week saw a couple of quiet days for the markets. A change of sentiment, something fundamental, or just a pause in proceedings? I'm going to go for option three, but the market certainly took a breather in the first half of this week. In truth, the little bull run that we've seen has backed off because of the saying, a bull market needs feeding. And the two stories feeding the little rally last week, Russian weather and crop conditions in the US, did not yield any more bad news at the start of the week. Wednesday was a strange day with no lead from the French, who were on bank holiday, but Thursday regained some normality with another positive close. May always brings futures technicalities. With old crop, unless you have a futures-linked contract, I think it's now best to get guidance on the direction of travel by looking at the new crop November numbers. Domestic consumers are trying to buy using the old crop May as a guide, but as sellers, what we really want them to do is use new crop November as the guide and work a discount back from there. Of course, this happens every year, and at some point old crop must meet new, but this year is unusual because of the carry from old crop to new crop. The market is asking us to carry product. Some can, and indeed will, but most of us cannot. We just hope that the June and July market reflects some of the gains that we continue to see in the new crop market. Many of you will have seen the latest headlines or concerns around European new crop. We know that their crop conditions are poor, but a quick look at the next 7-day forecast for much of Europe shows rain and lots of it. I've seen some quite scary predictions from some, but clearly this will be a concern for many. This is not a good news story. Meanwhile, on the other end of the scale is the weather for the next 14 days in southern Russia. Very dry again. As you can now tell, focus remains very much on weather. I think for the moment, we still need to be cautious about how bullish we become. Corn may have gone up 9% in 2 months, but it is still dirt cheap. And the wheat price in Russia, Ukraine and Eastern Europe is cheap too. Neither commodity will run out tomorrow. Because of the fund's involvement in the markets, I think we are seeing bigger shifts when they occur. But we've got to be careful that this doesn't draw us into assuming the market is now moving back in only one direction. These funds are powerful animals, and as we have seen in the first 3 months of this calendar year, they can influence markets in their desired direction. With our likely crop sizes in the UK, we will remain importers of wheat. That will be competing with the cheapest wheat that can be bought in, and probably maize too for the northern markets. And exporters of barley, which is circa £10 too expensive to put on a boat currently. If some of these highlighted stories develop, then the global values rise and we will rise with it, but we don't do it on our own without a big story to lead it. Some guide price for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, June 180 to 190, July 185 to 195, November 200 to 210, with Group 1 milling premium still holding between £60 and £70. Feed barley for May 155 to 165, November 175 to 185, oilseed rape May 360 to 370, July 365 to 375, and November 385 to 395. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Low pressure turning to high, wet weather turning to dry, both after Monday. Not much to worry about by way of wind, mostly easterly in single figures this week. Daytime highs in the mid-teens Celsius and overnights down to 7 or 8. Looking forward to seeing you at the Nottinghamshire County Show next Saturday, or maybe you fancy a bit of clay pigeon shooting for charity. Lincolnshire NFU is hosting an event raising funds for LRSN, Lives and the Links and Knots Air Ambulance, and that's also on Saturday. Details on social media. Next week on the programme, we'll talk pigs and poultry with the fair just a few days away. We'll get updates on potatoes and from LRSN and have the week in agriculture. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.